We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Right now, we're very happy to have Bob Herrig on the show, who, of course, covers golf for ESPN. And I know you're very busy with the Masters and all of your coverage. So thanks for making time for us today, Bob. We appreciate you. Lots to talk about, so let's get to it. I was just confronted by an angry Oklahoma Sooners grad in here, and he was mad about Abe Ancer and and what happened with him with the two-stroke penalty, and he wanted me to ask you how that came about, because people can't call in like you've seen that in the past. But how did that all play out to where he was penalized two strokes?
Yeah, it's a great question, because you can't call that in anymore. And look, I'll be honest with you, it's one of those really iffy rules things that I think sometimes it gives golf a bad name. Like, the average guy who tries to learn golf sees something like that and they go, "What?
Right.
Wait a minute, he got penalized for that?" Now look, by the letter of the law, yes, he looked like he caught the sand on the way back. And the reason that, you know, you're not allowed to do that is, well, you know, you're not supposed to ground your club in a hazard before you hit the shot. And also there's this notion of you don't want to be improving your lie or your line of play. Well, he didn't do that, you know. And now how did they find out about it? That's a really good question, because there must have been some talk about it on TV, or somebody in the committee or on the rules committee who's ever watching for them must have seen something, because they can't take that information from somebody else. You know, like it could have been somebody on the grounds, and maybe it was another player who asked them to look at it, you know, to protect the field type of thing. But I mean, he had signed his card and left the scoring area, so it clearly wasn't brought up at that point, because otherwise he would have waited. He wouldn't have signed his card. They would have reviewed it. So, you know, and yet it's funny is I've seen a lot of, you know, sort of a lot of reaction to this where people say, "Oh, he absolutely, you know, improved his lie. He deserved it." And well, you know, when you hit a bunker shot, you're coming in behind the ball 2 or 3 inches. Where that sand moved was like basically right at the ball almost as he took the club back. And you can see a tiny little bit of it move. But, you know, the other side is they're not supposed to use slow motion to make rulings. They claimed that you could see this with the naked eye, which is why they made the ruling. So, yeah, I just find that to be really unfortunate. I mean, two shots is incredibly harsh. And, you know, the guy goes from 73 to 75 and now having a really, you know, play his tail off today to try to make the cut.
Bob Herrig from ESPN is our guest, and the headline at your story at ESPN.com really caught my eye, because I'm a big boxing guy, and I see that Sergio Garcia said that he fought hard, but he felt like he just came out of the ring with Evander Holyfield in a 12-round fight. He needed to go home and rest. So that great quote, by the way, from Sergio Garcia. But elaborate on why Sergio felt that way.
Well, you know, it's funny, and later in the story, Gary Woodland referenced Mike Tyson.
Wow.
in the same way. Like, he said he felt like he got beat up by Mike Tyson. The greens are treacherous. At least they were yesterday. Kind of still waiting to see a bit of golf today to get a sense. They're just very hard and firm and fast, and they haven't been this way for a while here. You know, the weather often dictates that, and they've had a very dry, warm week leading up. Actually, over the weekend, last weekend, it was cold and windy, so that dries it out. And then when the sun comes out and it gets hot, now you're baking it out. And, you know, the only watering I saw being done was sort of, you know, hand watering. They weren't putting sprinklers on the greens or anything like that. So, you know, it leads to greens that are tough. I mean, on the 15th hole yesterday, Bernd Wiesberger had an eagle putt that he actually putted off the green into the water. Shane Lowry chipped one from behind the green into the water. You might argue that it's too severe if those things happen. But at least for a couple of days here, we got a chance of some rain later today and maybe tomorrow, and maybe that will take a little bit of the fire out of them. But I think they knew that they wanted to leave it this way until the weekend and see what the weather is, and then they could always put some water on them if need be.
Okay, Bob, because I'm that guy you just described that's trying to get into golf, that's baffled by some of the some of the rulings that we saw, and also like in watching the round yesterday, there, I can't remember who it was, but I was watching somebody who had a putt that he literally was like, if the hole was at 12 o'clock, he was aimed at 4 o'clock. And it rolled off the green, or at least like almost all the way off the green, and he wasn't even putting it at the hole. And I just thought to myself, like, do hardcore golf fans like it because it knocks these great golfers down to the point where they look human, or do you look at it and say, that's not golf, man? I mean, that's what's a guy supposed to do on a putt like that, I guess is my question.
It is true there are some putts out here that require a huge amount of knowledge, and you're going to have to hit a lot of break. And so I think that's fine. But to your point, when does it get silly? I think we were sort of on the line with that yesterday. And yet, I say that, and a guy shot 65, and a couple of guys shot 69, and we had like 10, 11 guys under par. If they don't do that, then how much? Well, then what's the scoring?
Right.
It's just that you almost had to be perfect to shoot a score like that, and I think that's really hard to do in golf. I think there's a segment of golf fans that does really like to see these guys struggle once in a while, and we usually see that at the U.S. Open. Here it's been less of that. The scoring is usually dictated by the weather, and again, I'm not sure that they went out of their way to make it hard.
Right.
I think that it's just the circumstances, and in a way, it's good. I mean. Hard, fast golf courses usually bring out the players who are playing the best. You can't get away with anything. If you hit a drive offline, it's going to run off the fairway into the rough. If you hit a poor approach shot, it's not going to get close to the pin, or it's not going to stay on the green. Whereas when they're soft, you can get away with a poorly struck shot, and your ball might still stay on there, which obviously is an advantage. Now you got to be way more precise, and then, of course, your short game's got to be really, really good. So it's a fine line for sure. And, you could see from some of the comments of some of the players in that story I wrote where, they were befuddled, and you got the sense that some of them weren't too happy with how it got.
We're speaking with Bob Herrig from ESPN. Bryson DeChambeau was humbled yesterday. Do you think he's going to make the cut?
He's got work to do, I think. I mean, that's... The cut's probably going to be, it's the top 50 in ties now, and I would guess the cut's going to be maybe two, three. I guess there's a chance it could be three or four over, and he was four over yesterday. So he's going to probably need to shoot under par to make the cut. And that certainly wasn't what he was thinking coming into the week. He wanted to contend. He only made one birdie yesterday. For a guy who has that kind of length and to be able to, dominate supposedly, to only have one birdie, that tells you something was up. He just sort of has not figured this place out yet. And it just goes to show that there is more to it than hitting it a long way.
No doubt about it. So, To go back to Justin Rose, because you said in the context of the way the course was playing yesterday, for him to go out and have that 7-under is just incredible. I don't know enough about the history, so can you enlighten me? What does a lead the size of his mean this early in the tournament with the way the course is playing right now? Does it mean as much as it looks on the score sheet?
To be honest with you, not after one round. You know, I don't think so. You know, he's already today made two bogeys, a birdie and two bogeys. So he's dropped back to six under. You know, if he shoots 74 today, which is, you know, can happen, certainly, he allows people the chance to catch up. But obviously, he's given himself the ability to, you know, to sort of make some mistakes. He's given himself a cushion. It's hard to play under par here every round. So by getting that kind of lead, he's really helped himself immensely. I mean, it'd be hard to believe that he wouldn't be in the mix at the very least going into the weekend. And that one day can do that for you.
You think Jordan Spieth is back?
I think he is. Not all the way, not where he was a few years ago. He even said as much. But he's certainly a lot closer than he's been. And to get a win, you know, I think that says a lot. You know, he got a win saying that he's not all the way back. I think that bodes well for him, because if he feels he's working on the right things and moving in the right direction and he still won a tournament. And that was a heck of a 71 he shot yesterday. He had a triple on the ninth hole and managed to, you know, work his way back on the back nine and get it under par, which is pretty impressive. And, you know, he might be kicking himself for that triple. It was sort of an unforced error. I mean, yeah, you're going to hit some bad drives, but he probably should have taken his medicine and punched it out into the fairway instead of trying to get through there. And instead, you know, he ended up costing himself big time. You know, a bogey there isn't the end of the world. You know, we'll see how he does again today. I think it'll be interesting how he tries to get after it again after a really nice back nine yesterday.
Hey, Bob, before we let you go, what's your gut tell you? Who's going to wear the green jacket?
Well, my original pick was Rory, so take it for what it's worth at this point, right? I still kind of like a guy like John Rahm's position, even though he's even par and several shots back. You know, if Justin Rose let some people back in, I think Rahm, who's playing very well and he's done well here in his limited tries, I just sort of like his game for this course. So, you know, that's kind of a maybe after yesterday you might not have picked him because he's several shots back, but to be honest with you, there's not that much space between many players between him and the lead. And if Justin Rose slips, it's right there for him.
Bob, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you very much. And obviously, very busy covering the Masters, and very glad that Bob could make some time for us after being thoroughly harassed via text message by Jake the last couple of days. And so I'm glad he was in a good mood when he talked to us. You can follow him on Twitter at Bob Harrig, B-O-B-H-A-R-I-G, Bob Harrig. He covers golf for ESPN and gets text messages at weird times. You're not texting him like at 3:30 in the morning when you're out running and stuff. You're not doing that.
I leave those text messages for you guys.
But there are hours of the day where you are... You know, you're a lone wolf.
I don't sleep a lot.
Right.
I don't sleep a lot.
I know, but I'm just saying, you know, I feel like your juices are really flowing at about 3:30 a.m. and I don't know if anyone else's juices are flowing at that point. So I'm hoping, like, hey, Bob, can you come on today?
It's part of the reason why I enjoy that time.
Right.
Everybody else is sleeping and I'm getting after it.
Lone Wolf McQuade starring Chuck Norris.
Great movie.
Lone Wolf McQuade starring Jim
Can't bury
Katera's.
Him.
Well, no.
Cannot bury
no,
him.
No, because he'll pour beer all over himself.
And then wake up and drive that Bronco right through the dirt.
Those were the best things ever.
Think Nate has any idea what we're talking about?
No.
But I did see Sideways. You guys referenced that yesterday. Saw that one.
Did you like it?
I liked it, yeah.
Like you just recently saw it or you saw it?
No, I saw it back when it came out.
With Noel?
That's one of those movies, like when it's like, oh, I want to get to this part. No, I want to get to this part. No, I want to get.
I haven't seen that movie for a while.
I've only seen it the one time, and I liked it.
It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
My dad didn't like it.
Why not?
Ah.
Too much wine.
And Paul Giamatti, his character was real whiny and pouty. Didn't like that.
He didn't like him on the golf course, though.
I don't know. I didn't discuss
it's a
that.
Great
part
scene.
It is.
I liked it.
Bet your old man would do that if someone hit into him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know,
turn that ball around, just start firing it at
that's
him.
That's right.
Golf course etiquette's a big sticking point with pops.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about that after this on WHB.